Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the IBI Group's second quarter 2021 results conference call. Please note that IBI's complete financial statements and management's discussion and analysis for the 3 and 6 month periods ended June 30th, 2021 were filed on SEDAR and have been posted on IBI's website at www.ibigroup.com. During the formal remarks, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star followed by 1. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. Some of the statements on today's call might contain forward-looking information. Listeners are cautioned not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements, since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities law. For further information on risk factors, please view the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities and available on the company's website, SEDAR, or by contacting IBI directly. All amounts discussed today are in Canadian dollars unless otherwise stated. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer for IBI Group. Please go ahead, Mr. Stewart.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Stephen Taylor, IBI's Chief Financial Officer, is also on today's call. We appreciate the opportunity to share an update on the firm's performance throughout the second quarter, as well as provide some insights into our performance by business sector. We are very pleased with IBI's performance to date in 2021 and remain excited about our future. IBI's unique position as a technology-driven design firm is truly healthy to differentiate our firm from the peer group. Integrating intelligence through our buildings and infrastructure sectors continues to attract new work. This in turn contributed to IBI's improved financial performance in Q2 2021. Over the same period in 2020, highlighted by the following points. 13% growth in revenue, organic growth of 7.6%, 5% increase in our EBITDA net IFRS 16, 22% growth in diluted EPS, and a 17% increase in our backlog. With this strong increase in our backlog at quarter end, we've also made the decision to increase our 2021 net revenue guidance to $435 million from $422 million. Following our AGM on May 14th, Sharon Ransom was appointed to IBI's Board of Directors, bringing the board composition to 43% female. We are seeing the benefits of our internal promotions in the first quarter of the year, with Audrey Jacob being appointed to Chief Operations Director and Kevin Bevedek assuming the role of lead of our intelligence practice. Both leaders are championing a more efficient and streamlined approach to business processes and proactively driving our technology-led approach across the firm. Ms. Jacob is leading our strategy around the reopening of our offices, as well as our go-forward approach to remote and hybrid working. While we are assessing the options, we recognize that the landscape is very different across 60-plus global offices. We continue to prioritize the health, safety, and well-being of staff by encouraging remote working until the pandemic situation is more stable. Our longer-term approach will be a hybrid working model, allowing us to provide staff with greater flexibility while also reducing our office footprint and lowering our cost base, and in turn, reducing our carbon footprint. As part of our continued growth, we welcome more than 300 new staff into the firm this quarter, bringing our global staff complement to over 3,200. We continue to pursue opportunities for growth in major urban areas. We are achieving this through strategic hires, major investments, as well as pursuing potential acquisitions. I'm pleased to share that we are currently developing a new strategic plan, which will be focused on improving our efficiency and increasing our recurring revenue, as well as leveraging technology and data to create superior urban environments. We will be formally announcing the plan in the first quarter of 2022. In Q1, we announced the newest partner in our Smart City Sandbox, Multiplex. Multiplex is enthusiastic about leading innovation in the construction sector, which is a key area of technology disruption for cities. With its domain knowledge and routes to market, it represents an exciting potential partner for Sandbox startups and SMEs, and we will be exploring potential collaborations with Multiplex throughout the course of the year. IBI's interest in Sandbox startup Switch, a leader in electric vehicle charging energy management, has reached an exciting milestone with a pilot at our Toronto head office now underway. The pilot's goal is to demonstrate how EV charging management platform with bidirectional capabilities can significantly reduce the cost of EV charging for property managers while enhancing the overall efficiency of the grid. Our investment in Switch supports IBI's commitment to the environment and reducing carbon emissions. It also supports our objective to foster the increased usage of EV infrastructure across Canada and beyond, a priority area of interest for IBI with the growth we are seeing in electric vehicle sales. Within our product portfolio, our Travel IQ traveler information software continues to gain traction across North America, currently providing coverage to 1 in 4 Americans. Most recently, we've been awarded a statewide contract in Georgia for up to 5 years, as well as a contract in Southern Virginia. We are also adding a 5-year contract with the Canadian territory, the Yukon, to our extensive portfolio, which includes Alaska, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, Wisconsin, Florida, Louisiana, Arizona, Southern California, and Kern County, California, in the U.S. As well, we have the provinces of Ontario and Alberta in Canada, and that's not to mention the deployment of Travel IQ in South Africa. IBI's curbside management solution, Curb IQ, is designed to help cities better understand their curb management, which is precious real estate. The team recently supported the Seattle Department of Transportation in generating a curb inventory in order to manage it in the curb platform. We also recently announced IBI's partnership with Los Angeles Urban Movement Labs, where Curb IQ is being applied as part of a pilot to digitize existing curbside regulations in key areas of LA. We are rolling out our workplace management solution, InSpace, as we begin to reopen certain IBI offices as part of a hybrid working model. InSpace continues to be used for health assessment and contact tracing across all IBI offices. Externally, we won 2 new clients this quarter, which brings the current number of InSpace end users to approximately 5,000. The largest client is expanding the product's usage to additional offices. Our product updates include the launch of the web version as well as the French language version of the app. As more organizations move to a hybrid working model, we are seeing an increased interest in InSpace and its ability to provide a workspace management solutions that supports more informed real estate decisions. We anticipate that there will be hybrid models across the environment, and workplace management like InSpace will become necessary corporate software. In our traditional intelligence sector, we've had a number of notable wins this quarter. We were awarded 2 bridge toll systems contracts in Michigan following the success of our work on the Mackinac Bridge and our ongoing work on the new Gordie Howe International Bridge. This new contract will see IBI's toll system implemented on the Blue Water Bridge and the International Bridge. This strengthens our footprint in the U.S. market and will also contribute to our 10 years of ongoing work on the operations and maintenance of the systems. With the growing need and demand for the modernization of transportation infrastructure in the U.S. and globally, IBI's toll systems offer a turnkey solution to help fund construction, operations, and maintenance. Just announced this morning, we were awarded a contract by the City of Toronto to operate its Road Emergency Services Communications Unit, otherwise known as RESCUE. Essentially, it is the traffic operations center for the city. The contract will extend for up to 5 years, It offers an opportunity to, in addition to operations, leverage our smart city product offerings, including CurbIQ and TravelIQ, to support the city with improved road safety and the efficient movement of goods and people. This notable award brings together expertise from across our intelligence sector and infrastructure sector and illustrates the benefit of our smart city products. In Western Canada, we are working as part of a consortium to deliver next-generation broadband network to the town of Brooks in rural Alberta. IBI will plan and design a 10-gigabit fiber network, which will become one of the first of its kind in North America. Affordable, high-speed internet is critical to help improve the quality of life for those living in rural communities, especially with the pandemic where more people are working from home. It also lays a foundation for communities to begin implementing other smart technologies and remaining competitive. This is a broader objective of national governments, both in the U.S. and Canada, where budgets will be set aside to support the rollout of rural broadband. In addition to the wins we've seen in our intelligence sector and through our product portfolio, our buildings and infrastructure sectors remain strong with a significant backlog of work. Adding to our ongoing high volume of use urban high-rise development projects, we are seeing a notable increase in development opportunities in suburbs and very large land parcels. Many of these projects include multiple towers over multiple phases of development, which bodes well for our immediate and long-term pipeline. In the GTHA, we've had success and commenced work on some major projects in Vaughan, Markham, Richmond Hill, Scarborough, Pickering, Mississauga, and Hamilton. And we are seeing similar trends across North America. We're also seeing urban infill projects gain momentum due to the market conditions as well as an increased appetite for rental development. Hotels are also making a comeback as pandemic conditions ease, and we've been recently awarded a significant resort hotel project with a well-known brand in the United States. Additionally, IBI is leading the design for a major new entertainment venue in Toronto called History, which is a collaboration between Live Nation and Canadian icon Drake. Our UK healthcare practice continues its strong performance with projects that have been awarded as part of the government's healthcare infrastructure plan. Our UK expertise is also being leveraged in healthcare pursuits across our North American and international regions. And in the US, our industrial practice has been a key driver of success in this region as a Ford project and work in other automotive clients, including the area of electric vehicle assembly plants, continues. We anticipate a very strong remainder for 2021 and 2022 in our building sector, with ongoing work and significant projects in our high-rise residential, healthcare, transit, and education practices. IBI is currently responsible for shaping several large land holdings with approximately 5,000 acres of planning work that is underway in major urban areas across North America. All of these represent opportunities, provide a pipeline of opportunity for our design practice that can extend for decades, as we've seen with the CN Lands and Liberty Village. We are also seeing a number of cross-service land development opportunities as a result of the Cole acquisition. We are now able to offer key value-added services through our civil and environmental engineering expertise as a continuation of our planning services, which represents a larger revenue profile. Leveraging synergies, we have won three new projects this quarter, including a major box retailer, our big box retailer, and close to 2 million square feet with a major industrial developer. And in our transportation infrastructure practice, our work continues on Eglinton LRT, the Huron Ontario LRT, the Scarborough and Yonge subway extensions, the Edmonton LRT, and the Tel Aviv Red Line, among others. And we are on various teams bidding other major projects that are in the procurement process. I would now like to hand the call over to Stephen Taylor, our Chief Financial Officer, to take you through IBI's financial results for Q2 2021. Stephen?
Thank you, Scott. As Scott mentioned, we are very pleased with IBI's results and performance during the second quarter of 2021. As at June 30th, 2021, our backlog totaled $604 million for 17 months, which is $86 million higher than that existed at June 30th, 2020, reflective of IBI's improved pace of securing work. Growth in our net revenue to $113.2 million includes both organic growth of $7.6 million, as well as growth attributable to acquisitions that were closed in the previous two quarters. During the first half of 2021, net revenue also grew 13% over the same period in 2020. IBI's adjusted net of IFRS 16 EBITDA impacts continued its positive trend, totaling $18 million, or 15.9% of net revenue in Q2, 5% higher than the same period in 2020, and 10% higher than the previous quarter. In the first half of this year, our adjusted EBITDA net of IFRS 16 impacts was 11% higher than the first half of last year. As we saw in Q1, a weakening U.S. dollar versus the Canadian dollar resulted in lower net revenue in Q2 than otherwise would have been the case for all three business sectors, and was particularly pronounced for our intelligence sector. This is due to a combination of both FX impacts as well as activity curtailment in certain technology-centric countries which have been dealing with continuing COVID issues. Consistent with the first quarter of 2021, net revenue growth in Q2 was driven largely by buildings and infrastructure, with year-over-year increases of 11% and 32% respectively. Adjusted EBITDA net of IFRS 16 impacts as a percentage of net revenue from buildings was 21.7%, while infrastructure was 19.3%. Intelligence generated $19.2 million in net revenue and $4.2 million in adjusted EBITDA net of IFRS 16 impacts, representing a 22.1% of net revenue. These numbers reflect modest declines to the previous quarter and in the same quarter in 2020 due to the reasons I previously mentioned. A good example of the role FX plays is evident in our recurring software support and maintenance business, which totaled $5.1 million in the quarter, but would have been $5.5 million but for the impact of foreign exchange. Similarly, through the first half of 2021, we billed $10.4 million in recurring software support and maintenance, which is 1% higher than the prior year. But this figure would have been $11 million absent the foreign exchange impact. IBI continues to be excited about the long-term potential of intelligence, including the SaaS products and recurring revenue opportunities available because of the volume of data we collect. So we are directing resources and further activity to growing this sector. Given a large portion of these contracts are executed with governments, it's reasonable to anticipate longer sales cycles than might be expected with private sector clients. However, as a technology-driven design firm, our unique intelligence offering contributes to IBI securing many project wins across other areas. So we are benefiting in buildings and infrastructure from the work that our intelligence people are doing. From a geographic perspective, Canada remained robust in Q2 2021 compared to Q2 2020, with net revenue and adjusted EBITDA growth of 25% and 5% respectively, while the UK posted net revenue growth of 17%, related primarily to our healthcare practice, leading to an adjusted EBITDA increase of 140%. In the US, we remained active across the country and in various industries, and while our net revenue declined slightly, we increased adjusted EBITDA by 16%. IBI recorded $8.3 million in net income in the quarter, or 22 cents per basic and fully diluted share, growth of over 22% over Q2 2020. We are no longer required to record a fair value adjustment of our other financial liabilities following the redemption of our convertible debentures in January, which we believe will smooth out volatility in net earnings and EPS and make IBI earnings a more meaningful metric for investors than it may have been historically. At the quarter end, DSOs stood at 58 days, meaningfully lower than both the previous quarter and the same quarter in 2020, a testament to IBI's commitment to accelerated billing and collection procedures. In addition, our diligence over the past several years to enhance IBI's financial flexibility has resulted in further strengthening of the balance sheet. As of June 30th, our net debt stood at $44.2 million, which represents 0.9 times ratio of net debt to trailing 12 months adjusted EBITDA calculated for bank covenant purposes, the lowest we've seen in many years. Our ability to generate free cash flow has afforded us this strong liquidity position. In light of this, our go-forward strategy for capital allocation and the use of borrowing capacity is expected to include strategic acquisitions that can underpin growth, along with investments in new products and technologies that can improve efficiencies. We will also make use of our normal course issuer bid to buy back shares where it is appropriate. And of course, we remain committed to maintaining this financial flexibility over a longer time horizon. With a healthy potential of pipeline of potential acquisition opportunities that we're currently reviewing, we believe that IBI's deal flow pipeline will remain robust. Ideally, we are interested in opportunities that allow IBI to create new work by leveraging our intelligence capabilities, focusing on systems and infrastructure required to support the growth of major urban areas. We will stay true to our strategy of targeting entry points closer to the ground floor rather than seeking later stage opportunities that may come with a higher multiple. I'd like to thank you, Scott. Scott and I will now take questions. Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star 2. And please lift your handset before entering any keys if you're using a speakerphone. One moment for your first question. Your first question comes from Michael Tupholme, TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Congratulations on a good quarter.
Thanks, Mike.
And Mike.
So very healthy organic growth this quarter. Can you talk about your organic growth outlook for the rest of the year? And specifically, I guess, should we be looking for something similar in the third and fourth quarter, or with the backlog improvements you've seen, is there room for further upside, or how do we think about the second half in terms of organic growth?
I don't know if we'll be able to maintain the same pace, but certainly we're seeing a very strong demand for services, certainly across Canada as well as the United States and the UK and healthcare. Will still be positive. I'm not sure that it'll be at the same level of over 7%, but we certainly target something in the order of 3 or 4% of organic growth. And I see that as being very achievable. We do have, as mentioned, a very strong backlog of work, plus the wins that we've announced in the more recently in the intelligence sector. Will it be 7.5%? I don't know, or 7.6. I would target something more in the 3 range, which has been what we typically target.
Okay, I appreciate that. Scott, you just mentioned intelligence there. So if we look at the second quarter net revenue in intelligence, it was down, I think, about 7%. And I know there was a very meaningful currency headwind really across all parts of the business this quarter. But still seems like organic growth and intelligence was a bit sluggish. Just wondering, how we should think about organic growth specifically in intelligence going forward, what sort of visibility you have over the next 6 to 12 months. Do you see, given all the efforts you've been putting into that area and the various opportunities there, do you see that accelerating over the near term?
Historically, we've seen organic growth in intelligence in the order of 6 and 8%, and that would certainly be our expectation going forward. Through the COVID period, there was a significant slowdown in the award and negotiation of contracts, and that includes the ones just announced on Travel IQ as an example. It took much longer time to really bring those awards to closure. at the moment, and with the recent announcements, I don't see that there will be significant movement in the numbers in intelligence organically, anyway, until the fourth quarter of this year. It just takes time to get those projects up to speed. I would say that more generally, there is a strong demand for all of the products and services and solutions that we have in the intelligence area. And I would see it then establishing a more traditional growth rate once we, and, you know, I trust we'll see it in Q4. And that includes a number of other areas, some of which we touched on in the earlier conversation, like rural broadband is one of those untapped areas. Opportunities in electric vehicle charging are new initiatives for us that I see will certainly add to the strong and traditional organic growth in intelligence.
Okay. And then I guess just lastly for me, in terms of the margin outlook, I guess there was some movement within certain segments. I think infrastructure's margins were up a fair bit year over year. Looks like corporate costs were up quite a bit. I'm just trying to get a sense as we look forward, maybe just on a consolidated basis, and you can maybe speak to some of the subparts as well if possible, but on a consolidated basis, are you expecting there to be an opportunity for some margin improvement going forward, or is this sort of the level we should think about?
I would stick more to this level to be conservative. We are seeing significant wage pressure across the industry, not just IBI, but it's across the industry. And we're seeing some of the challenges of the pandemic now hitting home about just the whole exhaustion that people have been feeling, and I think that's pretty, again, this is universal across the industry. So I wouldn't anticipate in the near term any change in margin, but certainly it has always been our commitment, but through investment in tools and procedures and processes internally, that even our traditional, if you will, hourly-based design services will become more productive and margins will increase, but I don't see it happening through the rest of this year.
Okay, thank you. I'll turn it over.
Your next question comes from J.F. Lavoie of Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking my question. So, Scott, you mentioned M&A in your release and the active pipeline of opportunities that you're looking at. I was just wondering if your focus is more on traditional A&E firms or you're also looking at technology companies to complement the intelligence segment. Thanks.
The simple answer is we're looking at both. Because we have seen that there's a lot of synergy between in just traditional firms because they provide new routes to market, new clients and new clients and new opportunities, and to promote our intelligence services into those marketplaces. So there's a lot of leverage and upside that we see with that, and even just expanding the more traditional kinds of services. Some of that that I mentioned in greenfield development that has been done by IBI was really strengthened by the fact that we acquired Cole, but the technology side is also significant because we get tremendous leverage out of even small acquisitions because we're able to use the rest of the firm as a path to market. And we've seen that with the acquisition of Aspire 2 years ago, and where not only have they doubled because of us being a route to market for their services, they have more than doubled, in fact. But it also strengthens our standing with traditional clients. The work that we are doing on the Ford Hub, one of the most sophisticated design buildings in the world, was fundamentally opened up for us because of the conversations we were then having around technology by bringing in a relatively small firm on this very large project. So it's both. The simple answer is both.
That's great. And staying on M&A, I was just wondering if you could comment about the ongoing integration of Peters Energy and Cold Engineering, and maybe disclose the revenue contribution of these two acquisitions in Q2, please? Thanks.
We can't. It's really hard to distinguish the revenue contribution of Peters Energy because it is a relatively small group, and we really want to be able to integrate it. I'll let Stephen speak to the revenue side of coal, but the key thing, it's not only the revenue that they generate based on the resources that they provide, but further to the point I had made about our engagement in greenfield development, the whole opportunities in areas of industrial, commercial, and development, especially around logistics, has been so much strengthened by having coal on side with us. We can now have those conversations that we never used to have before, or provide the continuing services that we never used to have before. And it's opened up a whole additional, if you will, group of clients for us. It really is quite surprising that the ability of traditional services expanding the revenue and business opportunities with traditional clients. Stephen, I don't know if there's anything you want to say about the revenue contribution of coal.
Well, what I would like to say is that we had said in the quarter that our total revenue increase over same quarter last year was 13%. We were just over about 7.5% of that was organic. The rest of it comes from those two acquisitions that we completed both in early December last year and January of this year. So that gives you a sense of what the contribution was from those two businesses in the quarter. So I hope that helps, JF.
Yes, that helps. Thank you very much. And lastly, for me, congrats on the strong DSO performance in the quarter. Moving forward, Stephen, would it be fair to assume a normalization of DSOs throughout the second half of the year, or you're confident to maintain the current level?
I think what you're going to see is it will fluctuate depending on the quarter. It will fluctuate two or three days in either direction. We tend to be having we had very strong cash collections in December. We had strong cash collections in March and again in June. At quarter end, partially it's our guys pushing to get money in the door, but it's also particularly in the March quarter end with government clients, them getting the amounts paid to spend their budget before the end of the year. So I think the swing may be less in September, but historically being the last two or three years, we've also had strong December cash collection months. Hence, I think you can 2 to 3 points or 2 to 3 days in either direction swing from quarter to quarter as we move throughout the year. All in all, we're quite healthy in terms of getting bills out the door and cash collected.
That's great. Congrats on the strong result.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jan.
Your next question comes from Maxim Sytchev of National Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, Max. Hi, good morning. Hi, Steve.
Quick
question. Hey, good morning. Steve, maybe I'll start with you. The corporate EBITDA was minus 5.7, I think, versus minus 1.7 last year. What is the reason for that $4 million delta, if you don't mind?
I think there's a number of things. Stronger share price results in because most of our directors get paid in DSUs, we end up with corporate costs for director expenses that go up as stock price goes up. Equally so with other compensation amounts that are driven off of the share price. Other things that were in corporate this year, we tend to do the midway through the year, do our bonus accruals through our corporate sector, and then spread them out across the sectors as we get to the end of the year, when it becomes more clear as to who's going to get paid what in what sector. So there's nothing out of the ordinary. It's I think it's all in compensation costs that are all centrally recorded.
Great. And so I guess, can you talk about sort of the run rate that we should be using for that line item, or it's truly dependent on share price generations?
Generally, I think we're probably looking somewhere between sort of $4 to $4.5 million a quarter is what our overall corporate expenditure is.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. And then, Scott, was wondering if you don't mind maybe discussing a little bit the M&A environment. You know, some of your peers are talking about multiples, inflation, and things like that. I mean, obviously, you're going after different type of assets, but just curious in terms of the general commentary on what's available, pricing, sales expectations, and so forth.
Well, there's a continuing array of opportunities on the M&A front, especially from two perspectives. One is that, especially in the privately owned firms that where the owners have gone through the 2008 and they survived, and you know, and then they had a robust recovery, and then they've now gone through the pandemic, they're tired. And we are seeing interest or activity in the market of those firms coming to the market. But also what is driving them is it's some of the multiples that we're now seeing where those owners are saying, now's the time to cash in, I'm in my in my 50s, it's time to sell, and my goodness, with the Biden infrastructure initiative, I really should be, now's the time. So the multiples have gone up. We are seeing pressure that way. We're also seeing much more activity and private equity coming in as opposed to just competing against other firms. We do like to believe that our story and our pitch about being a technology-driven design firm is compelling. It certainly has attracted the firms that we have acquired to date, and by rewarding them as well in the participation in the growth in IBI. So your point is bang on. There is competition, and the rates are higher. The multiples are higher in anticipation of the significant infrastructure spend in the United States.
Right. Okay. And actually, do you mind maybe kind of building on the last point around the Biden projected spending and maybe splitting it in two buckets? One of them is kind of, you know, the legacy architecture work that you've been doing, and then some of the intelligence, you know, EV charging side of things in terms of, you know, where you guys could benefit, if you don't mind just discussing this.
Well, in the traditional areas, it's a lot of it is in the areas of a lot of the big spend is in highway infrastructure and to a certain extent, public transport, highway infrastructure in particular. So we have very strong engineering practices in the Northeast, in Ohio and Michigan that have been growing. And we have a transportation practice all along the West Coast. Plus, we are seeing our traditional, what I call intelligence in public transport, where there's a lot of money that is going into public transport. And I'm not talking necessarily about the big LRT capital infrastructure initiatives, but more public transit efficiencies, especially given what's happened in terms of ridership. So that's being underpinned by the funds. But the exciting part for us is for sure in the following areas. EV charging, and there will be a significant amount of money set aside for school fleets, bus fleets, and public transit fleets. We do a lot of work, especially in the maintenance facilities for public transit operations. So all of those maintenance facilities will be going through a major refit, and we have under half a dozen, but it's a significant number of projects underway, and that we're pursuing to do the retrofit of those buildings. We built parametric modeling around what the impact is on the grid, the storage requirements, the opportunity for solar to augment the energy source. So we're very excited about that, and we feel we're in a very strong position because we also have our school practice, our education practice in the United States, both along the West Coast, in Texas, and also in the Northeast. And because of the school practice that we have, we're involved with the school boards, and they are the ones that are looking therefore at the conversion over to some form of electrification of their school buses. We're also very
I didn't mean to interrupt. Please go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the other side of it is what I would call more private sector competitive charging, competitive markets where EV charging is growing rapidly. If electric vehicles are growing rapidly, and you just saw probably Biden's announcement that targeting 50% of all new vehicle sales to be electric vehicles by 2030. One of the big challenges and opportunities with that is challenges is the range anxiety and looking for opportunities that are other than at home charging and other than at work charging. And so with our connection to and relationship with the buildings group sectors, we see opportunities to be able to take in, say, level two charging as a new offering into that sector. So stay tuned in that. We see that there's going to be significant growth and significant support. And that fits in with our ability to combine billing, our electric vehicle considerations, our systems integration and implementation capabilities, given our toll systems, traffic management systems, curb IQ, it all starts to fit together in a very kind of compelling way. So that's on the EV side. I wanted to go on to the broad side because I see that also. Any questions about the electric vehicle market?
So maybe just one last one in terms of, like, if you were trying to combine sort of all these various pieces that are touching upon EV infrastructure, is this, like, I don't know, is it like 1%, 2%, 3%, 5% of the business for you guys right now? How should we think about the materiality and where it could go?
At the moment, I wouldn't say it's not material at the moment, but we're going to make it material. We see it as a very significant growth market for us, and there's more to come on that. We're looking at different ways that we can participate in that, different ways that we can establish a continuing revenue stream from that, and how it complements our active transportation, our mobility initiatives generally, and even complementing our travel IQ and curb IQ, because it starts to fit together as a really integrated, compelling solution in the mobility market. All I can say is stay tuned on that, because we do see some interesting things that are in the offing in that area.
Right, agreed. And then, yeah, if you don't mind just expanding on the broadband opportunity.
Well, IBI, going back to a couple of decades ago, has been involved in the design and rollout of large-scale broadband networks, including the SuperNet in Alberta, where we some 10,000 kilometers of fiber build, work we did with AT&T and the like in the Northwest United States. So we have capabilities, and all of our big systems, our transportation systems, all have large-scale broadband capabilities included within that. We are very focused, though, on, and right now I'm a beneficiary, as I speak at the moment, of rural broadband, because I see it as absolutely central to deliver some of the, to the rural areas, the kinds of services that are going to be needed to take the pressure off cities, and especially as there's a movement out for certain parts of the population in cities. It's a big demand opportunity. And it's going to be subsidized by and supported by the federal government and the in both Canada and the United States. What I would like to see us do, though, is evolve from being a pure designer, which we're ideally suited to, but be more focused on actually engaging in the delivery of the services. Because closely attached to it, it's not only the end-user consumer service that is going to be compelling. It is then all the associated benefits that can be accrue to the communities, so smart communities. So some of the other things that we've talked about in the past, water management systems, power management systems, and the like. So, again, I would say we're still in the formative stages of that. It's not material in terms of our revenue at the moment. But I do see within the intelligence group, it's going to be a key foundation to so many things that we want to do. And there'll be a new direction that we will be taking in that area, I trust.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much for comprehensive answers.
Your next question comes from Troy Sun, Laurentian Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Troy.
Hello,
Troy.
Hi. I guess my first question, first of all, it was very good to see, you know, how many people were added in the quarter to IBI Group. I'm just wondering if there's a chance they can provide a little bit of a color just on the, I guess, the by sector or by practice breakdown in terms of the numbers of people that were added to your firm year. And also, I'm curious if you have any sort of internal vision for the near or the midterm in terms of the total number of people that you're trying to get to as a whole?
Let me offer a commentary on the latter. In the business, our current backlog of 17 months is by far the exception in the industry. And that's largely because we've been booking a significant amount of we've been booking more than we have been billing. and we like that because it really underpins growth. But a more conventional backlog would be more in the order of 12 months. And that's more of an industrial norm or industry norm. So I would anticipate that we will continue to add to our resources so that we get to that more normal, if you will, 12 months, but so long as we continue, of course, to book the new work to support that. What that means in terms of staff, I won't do the math right now, but you can start to do some quick math about what our billings are monthly and what the backlog is to be able to come up with what that might look like. And certainly we have a number of open positions at the moment that we are looking to fill. I would also, as a qualifier on the hiring of staff, philosophically, our focus is as much on hiring as it is on creating more productivity and more efficiency out of existing staff. And I don't mean that in a usury kind of way, but more by providing and creating tools that make it a better work environment, make it a more efficient work environment, a more enjoyable work environment that attracts the right kinds of people to IBI and that we get better efficiency out of that. Now, as we get better efficiency, we can start to service that backlog of work without necessarily hiring new people, at least not in the same ratio. And that's as much an objective of IBI as it is to hire new people. As for the split, I don't have the information on what the split is of new hires.
Scott, it breaks down to about, out of the total increase that you mentioned before, about 40% of that is in buildings, 40% in infrastructure, and 20% of the increase is in intelligence.
Okay, that's super helpful color there. I guess just to follow up on that front as well, As you guys are transitioning towards more of a, you know, remote technology model, does it impact your talent acquisition and retention at all? Like, if anything, theoretically speaking, does it make it easier for you to hit a higher headcount target than previously could have?
Well, it's hard to make a comparison between before and after COVID because the differences are so profound. I would say that what we've been able to demonstrate is that we were able to transition to work from home very efficiently at the outset of COVID. Two, we have been able to realize growth through COVID by being very productive. Our collaboration across the firm increased significantly, at least by our KPIs, by people being able to work from home using technology. And we're also seeing in certain situations where there's key staff that we would like to hire, and there are conditions that new hires are in large measure putting in place. They're saying their opening position is, I'll join you, but I want to work from home. And we see that that's the mentality that will continue. And I would say as a more of a footnote in this, but what we do see that is missing with that is the culture. And part of what we have to do to counterbalance this emphasis on work from home and the efficiencies and the carbon reduction, carbon footprint reduction in real estate that we need, we have to spend more attention on building the culture of IBM. But we'll do it in different ways. I mean, and we see that that culture is really, really important. My conclusion, we've crossed the threshold. Work from home, hybrid arrangements are going to be the norm going forward. And we will be at the forefront of how that, in our view, how that operates. Because most of our people are knowledge workers. I mean, almost all of our people are knowledge workers, like everybody on the call here. And so where you work doesn't necessarily have a huge impact on your productivity and efficiency. But with the tools that we have, we're able to bring together on projects teams from India and LA to Toronto to work on projects in a very seamless way. So that's a given for us going forward, is the technology and work-from-home arrangement.
That's really great color. Thank you very much. That's it for me.
Your next question comes from Brian Fast, Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Just one question for myself. If you take a step back and look at your offering as a whole, are there any services, technologies, or geographies that you would like to add, either be organically or inorganically?
Geographies? I would say our first priority is to strengthen our presence and profile in the United States. And that would be very much in targeted areas where there's strong urban growth. What we're seeing in Canada is really quite astounding, and we're benefiting from it, and significantly in the major urban areas of Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, Calgary, and so on. And that would be our priority, as I would see it, over the next couple of years. The UK offers some interesting opportunities in terms of strategic growth in selected areas. I would hold off on some of the other markets. We're not big fans of China, but there may be other selected opportunities that we might look at. Australia is a strong market. It's just it's far away, and it wouldn't be at this time the right thing to do to make a big investment to grow into that market. So simple answer, continuing to service Canada very strongly and providing a broader array of services, and especially being part of the life cycle of the assets we're designing and growing strategically in the United States.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Ian Gillies, Stifel. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone.
Hi, Ian.
Hi, Ian.
There's been a slew of announcements out of the Canadian government recently related to infrastructure spending. Are you seeing an increased pace of bidding activity picking up or dollars being deployed that gives you some comfort that the infrastructure spending that's been talked about for some time will now be happening more quickly than we may have thought, or is finally here, I should say?
Well, yeah, the infrastructure spending it's been very strong in Canada for some time when you look at just the projects that we're involved with. The recent $10 billion that the government committed to includes the Ontario Line in Toronto. We're on a bid team for that. There is the north-south extension of the Yonge Line in Scarborough. We're working on behalf of the TTC with a long-term contract to put together the bidding documents and oversee the P3 initiative there. There is the Eglinton extension to the airport that is part of that announcement, and also Hamilton, and we're also on a team for Hamilton. So I don't see any let-up in the pace of build-out in the Canadian market at all. In part, especially when you step back and you look at what's happening in terms of immigration and population growth and the economic drivers in Canada. I mean, it's fundamentally Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, Calgary account for over 40% of the GDP. Immigration, especially of knowledge workers into those markets, is very strong, and they are really focused. The immigration is really focused on the urban. Major urban centers. I don't see any let up in the demand for our services in those areas anytime in the near or even intermediate future. Look, it's very promising for us. Very confident about the opportunities.
Okay. Following up on an earlier question, I just wanted to reconfirm within the infrastructure EBITDA margin for the quarter. There was nothing in one time in nature, any sort of catch-up or anything along those lines that would have drove the margin significantly higher just for this period?
No. It was all just strong utilization of staff in the sector.
Okay. Last one, I'll just give it a shot. We'll see what I get. But there's been a number of contract wins on the intelligence side over the last, call it, 10 days. I think there's been five. Would you be willing to provide any goalposts as a whole for those contracts, what they may contribute for revenue or what it may mean from a materiality perspective?
Well, part of it is a concern of our competitiveness and providing. So I'll be a little careful about what I say. So I'll repeat what's been made public, and that is in the the toll contracts for the two bridges are $9 million U.S., and that's public. The City of Toronto is I'm a little hesitant to provide the number because I'm not sure what the city has itself even published, and I don't want to because it affects their competitiveness in procurement processes. So until they release, I don't want to release what those numbers might be. But it is significant. It is material over the next 5 years.
Okay. That's helpful. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Ian.
There are no further questions at this time, so I'll turn the call back over to Mr. Stewart. Please go ahead.
Thank you, everybody, for joining today. As we said throughout this and from the beginning, we're very pleased with the results. With that, we're going to really enjoy the weekend. And we wish the same to all of you, and look after yourselves and stay healthy. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Thank you.